stories, thousands of people march in the southwestern Yemeni city of Taiz to denounce the French president's anti-Islam comments. The United States sets a new worldwide record in confirmed COVID-19 cases in a single day, reporting over 100,000 new infections. Several countries in Europe impose tough restrictions to fight the coronavirus pandemic as the number of cases keeps surging across the continent. Welcome to the program. Thousands of Yemenis have held a protest rally against French President Emmanuel Macron's anti-Islam stance. The demonstration was held in the southern city of Taiz. Protesters condemned Macron's Islamophobic remarks and policies. They called on all Muslim nations to unite and boycott French products. Macron outraged the Muslim world by defending the publication of insulting cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad under the pretext of freedom of expression. This came after a teacher was beheaded by one of his students for showing the blasphemous caricatures. The U.S. has set a new worldwide record in confirmed COVID-19 cases in a single day, reporting over 100,000 new infections. The latest data indicates that the U.S. is now recording more than one new case every second. 31 states have also set records for increases in new infections. On Friday, more than a dozen U.S. states reported their highest one-day coronavirus cases, while 13 states were at record levels of hospitalized COVID-19 patients. Over 9.1 million Americans have so far been infected by the novel coronavirus. The disease has also claimed more than 230,000 lives in the country. The UK has announced a national lockdown amid a second wave of coronavirus outbreak that threatens to strain the health services.
And so now is the time to take action because there is no alternative. And from Thursday until the start of December, you must stay at home. You may only leave home for specific reasons, including for education, for work, let's say if you cannot work from home, for exercise and recreation outdoors with your household or on your own with one person from another household, for medical reasons, appointments, and to escape injury or harm, to shop for food and essentials, and to provide care for vulnerable people or as a volunteer.
Johnson added that all non-essential retail stores will close down, but there would be no need for citizens to stock up. The stringent measures come as the country's confirmed COVID-19 infections exceeded 1 million, with over 20,000 cases being reported daily. Tougher restrictions were also announced in several European countries, including Portugal and Austria. Greece is also on the verge of a partial lockdown. Meanwhile, France logged over 35,000 daily infections, raising its overall cases at over 1.3 million. Over 36,000 people have so far died from the disease in France. Europe accounts for half of the world's COVID-19 infections, with an average of over 240,000 cases per day. Saeed Pourreza joined us earlier with more on Britain's nationwide lockdown. Take a listen.
We're going to look at this nationwide lockdown going to play in place on Thursday in 5 days' time, and we're looking at non-essential shops and businesses closing. For example, the hairdressers, those in entertainment, the hospitality sector, pubs, they're going to have to shut down for the whole month. But schools, nurseries, colleges, and essential businesses will remain open for the next month. It is also important to mention that this is all happening as the so-called furlough scheme that supported companies to keep their employees in employment by covering two-thirds of their wages. That was supposed to end at the end of October, and now the government has said that it's extending it throughout November. But again, what is going to happen is these measures will have to be voted upon in Parliament.
A suspect has been arrested after a Greek Orthodox priest was shot and seriously wounded in the French city of Lyon. Local authorities and prosecutors said the person's motives, that is, were not immediately clear. Police said they could not confirm whether the person was the assailant. A source with local prosecutors in Lyon said they have opened an investigation into the attempted murder. On Thursday, three people were killed in a knife attack in the city of Nice. French officials described the incident as a terrorist attack. Political commentator Shabir Hassan Ali says Macron's stance is part of the Islamophobia campaign that is aimed at demonizing Muslims.
This episode shows the extreme political immaturity of Macron. It shows that he has no real intelligence, he doesn't understand how politics works in the world, and he somehow thinks just pointing the finger at Muslims after he himself has insulted the sensitivities and the sanctities of more than 2 billion people across the world. If these people had any honor and any dignity, and if they really stood behind this idea of so-called freedom of expression and freedom of speech, there are other subjects that if I mention right now, I will be in a lot of trouble. People have gone to jail for mentioning these other subjects, but insulting the prophet of more than 2 million people, someone who was sent as a mercy to humanity, this is somehow considered very brave and very secular and very wonderful by this immature child. This is not something that is isolated. It's not something that's just come out of Charlie Hebdo or Macron. This is something that has been part of the industry of Islamophobia that has been rampant for many, many years now, that has been demonizing Muslims in a way that historically other communities were demonized, which ultimately led to atrocities the likes of which we can't even talk about. Terrorist attacks where people are harmed, people are killed. These have nothing to do with Islam. These have nothing to do with any religion.
A nighttime curfew has once again been imposed in the U.S. city of Philadelphia amid ongoing protests over the police killing of an African-American man. Earlier, we discussed this in detail with our guests on our news review program. Take a look, please.
U.S. city of Philadelphia has been put under nighttime curfew again amid ongoing protests over the fatal police shooting of an African-American man. Now, this is the second time that the curfew has been imposed in Philadelphia this week. National Guard troops have already been deployed there, with the mayor saying forces will also be sent to critical government buildings and other infrastructure. The demonstrations began Monday after 27-year-old Walter Wallace was killed by two officers who claimed he was approaching them with a knife. Victim's family, though, says that he was suffering from mental issues. Since then, more than 200 people have been arrested and a number of officers injured. Some businesses say that they've been looted and vandalized throughout the rallies. And now joining us for this news review is Colin Campbell, joining us from Washington, D.C., and Walter Smolarlik, editor at Liberation News, joining us out of Philadelphia. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. What's going on, Colin? Give us the latest, if you could.
Yeah, so the National Guard has been deployed in Philadelphia. They say that they're there to protect buildings ahead of the elections, which will be on November 3rd. And if you've seen just how some of these protests have played out, we have seen a number of times when there are provocateurs or saboteurs or vandals that accompany some of these protests, either just trying to discredit the movement themselves or just trying to create mayhem to create more disturbance than what is necessary. And so as a measure, a defense measure, or some would say a proactive measure, these National Guard troops have been deployed around the city, setting up staging areas in case that the protesting escalates to a level of either looting or rioting or some type of vandalism where property is definitely threatened and people's lives are threatened.
Thank you, Colin. And Walter Smolarlik, welcome to the program, bud. Hope you're doing well. Now, Walter, we have two things going on here. We have the ongoing protests we've seen for months against police brutality against people of color and excessive use of force by U.S. police against people of color. And then we have the politicization of the rallies themselves, of what Colin just alluded to, especially now that we're getting really close to Election Day. Your thoughts on all the stuff going on at the same time here?
That's right. I mean, it's truly a remarkable confluence of events. I mean, here you have the wanton murder of Walter Wallace Jr. by Philadelphia police officers. And the Philadelphia Police Department has a long history and notorious record of brutality against black residents of Philadelphia. Listeners might be familiar with, for instance, the MOVE bombing in the 1980s. But yeah, I mean, this is something that is systemic and entrenched in Philadelphia and expressed itself in a horrific way when Walter Wallace Jr. was gunned down in front of his mother, who was pleading with police officers not to shoot. And yes, that's right. I mean, this comes a few days before Election Day. And Pennsylvania, I mean, could very well be the state that decides the election. Donald Trump has made, quote unquote, law and order a central feature of his reelection campaign. He's promising to crack down, to be tough, so to speak, against people who are exercising their right to protest against racism. He's completely embraced the police. And so this is something that he's predictably trying to politically capitalize on ahead of Tuesday's election.
And Colin, what did Donald Trump tell his supporters that the radical liberals and the radical left, they support the looters and agitators and vandals out in the streets, and they want to defund your police and basically to care nothing about your safety, right?
That's right, and this is a political strategy on behalf of the president and his administration to demonize those who are trying to assert some type of feeling of self-determination or feeling those who feel they are marginalized by law enforcement or justice systems that are in place that are supposed to be designed to protect people. Also, the mischaracterization of defunding the police, quote-unquote, is also rampant when trying to use it as a political talking point. As many people know who are familiar with the phrase actually means, it doesn't mean to get rid of the police. It means to reallocate funds that are given to police to possibly better organizations, agencies, or departments so that they can respond to calls commensurate with the level of attention that is needed for a safe outcome for those involved. So if you look at the situation with Walter Wallace, the 911 was the call for 911 was placed because he was having an episode. They really were hoping that an ambulance would show up, a medical professional would show up, someone who could de-escalate the situation and attend to Mr. Wallace in a way that would lead to a safe outcome. Instead, the police were called, and as they say, if you're a carpenter, every problem that you face looks like a nail, and then you respond by hitting it with a hammer. Well, this is what the police did. And yes, Walter Wallace was reported to have a knife, but it's very unclear. I wouldn't say it's very unclear, but it is very much disputed whether or not police had to fatally shoot him. There are number of episodes and scenarios where we've seen people with a dangerous weapon in their hand, not a firearm, mind you, where things were de-escalated and the person was either given attention medically or the situation was then diluted. But in this case, of course, they just decided to shoot because that's what they're trained to do.
Thank you, Colin. Walter, your final thoughts on this, please.
Well, I think that, you know, the protests are going to continue in Philadelphia and all across the country. I mean, we can't forget that this is connected with one of the most important political dynamics in the country, and that's the ongoing uprising against racism and police brutality that I think has become a defining feature of politics and political discussion and in fact, the broader society of the United States. I mean, we really can't overemphasize, I think, the importance of the fact that while these problems are not new, the problems of police brutality are not new, the response of people to it has so much energy behind it. And I think that's something that will be very, very long lasting.
Thank you, gentlemen. We're out of time. Both of you, I'd like to thank you for joining us on the program, and do stay safe. Colin Campbell from Washington, D.C., and Walter Smolarek joining us there from Philly. That's a wrap for this segment of your news review. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
In the United States, the number of guns being sold has surged to record levels this year. Research shows Americans are stocking up, that is, on firearms amid a year of racial tensions, and it all comes just days before the country's presidential election. Take a look, please.
A new study has shown that so far in 2020, Americans have purchased at least 17 million firearms. According to Small Arms Analytics, this is more than any other single year since records began. Gun sales across the country had already seen a surge in the spring because of the coronavirus pandemic, but they spiked even higher in the summer of widespread protests and anger over systematic racism. The demonstrations began following the police killing of an African-American, George Floyd. Small Arms Analytics says by August, the US had exceeded last year's total. By September, the US exceeded the highest total ever. It added that the number of guns sold through the end of September 2020 is not only more than last year, it's more than any full year in the last 20 years we have records for. The revelation clearly highlights the levels of unrest the United States has witnessed this year.
There's been a tremendous amount of unrest here in the United States. There has been the Black Lives Matter movement. There's killings almost every day of black people by police and by white supremacists. So there's a real sense of panic among certain parts of the population.
According to the analytics company, the previous record for estimated firearms sold in a single year was 16.6 million. That was in 2016, when Hillary Clinton ran for president against Donald Trump and endorsed a strong gun control platform.
And that has been the pattern in American history. Sales soar when politicians indicate tighter gun control regulations following mass shootings. But what makes this year different is that President Donald Trump has been very pro-gun. The record gun sales are actually due to the rising racial tensions and intense political polarization ahead of an election that's going to happen on Tuesday. Citing concern over civil unrest, the country's largest retailer, Walmart, removed guns and ammunition from its shelves last week. The decision was reversed on Friday, but with days before the election, the worried owners of gun shops are boarding up their store windows. On the backdrop of violent unrest on the streets, Trump has added to the tensions by repeatedly refusing to commit to a peaceful transfer of power.
Groups that advocate for an end to gun violence say that the surge in firearm sales will only increase the level of domestic violence. According to researchers at the University of California, gun purchases from March to May, linked to the coronavirus pandemic, were also associated with a nearly 8% rise in firearm violence across the United States. That's an estimated 776 additional shooting injuries. With much more ammunition on the streets, there's more fear across the towns and cities of America. A recent report by the Department of Homeland Security says groups and individuals with white supremacist ideologies pose the deadliest terror threat to the United States. Many of these right-wing extremists are armed and have also expressed support for President Trump. The fear is that deadly chaos could ensue if the country's presidential election on Tuesday is disputed by the incumbent. The eldest son of the late civil rights leader Martin Luther King says he fears that the election will bring about another civil war. Martin Luther King III said this is down to the kind of leadership the president has provided.
Without saying it, you know, the president doesn't say that, but he says what he needs to give people comfort in feeling that it's all right for them to say that this is what's going to happen. They themselves have said we're getting prepared for the Civil War. But everybody is buying ammunition, and it's not one side, by the way. You've got Democrats and Republicans who are gunning up.
Gun owners say months of sustained demand for firearms this year has resulted in a shortage of guns and ammunition. Long queues have been seen at gun stores. The highest sales are adding millions of weapons to a nation that already has more guns than people. With increased political polarization, racial tensions, and anger at coronavirus deaths, as well as lockdown restrictions, those post-election fears are not going to disappear.
Diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com
www.iribenglish.org/en.
In the limelight. Facing possible defeat in the U.S. presidential election, Donald Trump has again floated the idea of a rigged election, just days after his refusal to commit to a peaceful transfer of power, raising concerns that he might refuse to leave office, even if he loses the November vote. President Donald Trump has repeatedly cast doubt on mail voting, claiming that mail-in ballots lead to mass voter fraud. However, due to the coronavirus pandemic, millions of Americans prefer not to vote in person. At least in 9 states, every registered voter will automatically be mailed an application to request an absentee ballot. Experts believe that by escalating his ongoing attack on mail-in ballots, Donald Trump was ceding the ground to contest the election as rigged or fraudulent in the event of losing the election and push the country into chaos. The president also sent shockwaves across the United States recently when he refused to commit to leave office peacefully if he loses this November's election. We're prepared for you an article written by Muhammad Mashhadi entitled "A Bizarre Election, American Democracy at Dead End." Please stay with us for more. U.S. presidential election will be on the line this November, but what about the American democracy? President Donald Trump's wrong policies and statements not only have dangerously made America's democratic health hang in the balance, but also the country's integrity as a whole. Many consider Donald Trump as a very example of a politician who values and respects no moral principles, and is so narcissistic and power-hungry that it is hard for him to imagine leaving the White House. From such a perspective, it seems that the upcoming election may prove more critical and controversial than previous ones. According to The Guardian, when asked during a press briefing at the White House on 23rd of September, Donald Trump replied, "We're going to have to see what happens, you know that. I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster." Donald Trump refused to commit when asked again, "Get rid of the ballots and you'll have a very peaceful, there won't be a transfer, frankly, there will be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You know it, and you know who knows it better than anybody else. The Democrats know it better than anyone else." Critics say Trump wants to maintain his power and will use every means to stay in the White House, even if it leads to a deep split in the country or even a civil war. U.S. President Donald Trump said at the Republican National Convention on 24th of August, "The only way they can take this election away from us is if it is a rigged election." Unless he wins a bona fide victory in the Electoral College, Donald Trump looks determined to refuse to concede defeat, and his mere denial of defeat may have cascading repercussions. Facing possible defeat in the U.S. presidential election, President Donald Trump has once again floated the idea of a rigged election, just days after his refusal to commit to a peaceful transfer of power, raising concerns that he might refuse to leave office even if he loses this November's vote. Donald Trump tweeted, rigged election on Monday, 28th of September, along with a video purportedly showing a man caught on camera whilst paying cash for ballot exchange. The video shows a man buying a registration form for an absentee ballot for a voter, giving him pocket money of $200 and expecting to collect his ballot when the voter receives it. The man is heard saying, "Okay, when I fill it out, I'll bring it to you." Donald Trump has repeatedly cast doubt on mail-in voting, claiming that mail-in ballots lead to mass voter fraud. However, due to the coronavirus pandemic, millions of Americans prefer not to vote in person. At least in 9 states, every registered voter will automatically be mailed an application to request an absentee ballot. Experts believe that by escalating his ongoing attack on mail-in ballots, Donald Trump was ceding the ground to contest the election as rigged or fraudulent in the event of losing the election and push the country into chaos. His controversial remarks have drawn reactions from both Democrats and his own party members, with Republican Senator Mitt Romney saying in a tweet that a peaceful transition of power is fundamental to democracy. A Democratic lawmaker from California, Adam Schiff, described Trump's comments as an effort by the president to discredit the votes of millions of Americans, to stack the Supreme Court, to disenfranchise millions, and perpetuate himself in office by enlisting foreign assistance. Citing mail-in ballots, Donald Trump tweeted recently that this year's election may never be accurately determined. In another tweet, Donald Trump said, "Rigged election in waiting." In such a situation, it is natural for the American people to be in a panic about the future of their country because, in case of a civil war, all eyes will be on the U.S. Army. That is why top generals in the Pentagon have expressed their concerns about Trump's ordering active duty military into the streets of American cities to quell protests after the presidential election. Pentagon General Mark Milley of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in remarks released last month, made clear that the U.S. military is determined not to play a role in resolving the dispute over election results. General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said in written answers to questions from House lawmakers released last month, General Milley said, "I believe deeply in the principle of an apolitical U.S. military," adding, "In the event of a dispute over some aspect of the election, by law, U.S. courts and the U.S. Congress are required to resolve any disputes, not the U.S. military. I foresee no role for the U.S. armed forces in this process." On 11th of August, John Nagle and Paul Yingling, both retired U.S. Army officers and Iraq War veterans, published an open letter to General Milley on the website Defense One. They wrote, "In a few months' time, you may have to choose between defying a lawless president or betraying your constitutional oath," adding, "If Donald Trump refuses to leave office at the expiration of his constitutional term, the United States military must remove him by force, and you must give that order." Meanwhile, Donald Trump gave officials no solace when he refused to commit to a peaceful transfer of power, no matter who wins the election. On Thursday, 24th of September, he doubled down by saying he was not sure the election could be honest. His hedging, along with his expressed desire in June to invoke the 1807 Insurrection Act, to send active duty troops onto American streets to quell protests over the killing of George Floyd, has caused deep anxiety amongst senior military and Defense Department officials, who insist they will do all they can to keep the armed forces out of the presidential election this November. Despite statements by Pentagon spokesman Brooke DeWalt, who said recently that the Department of Defense has no role to play in the post-election transfer of power. Experts predict that Donald Trump may use the insurgency law to deploy military officers on the streets to suppress the protesters amid controversial election results. The Insurrection Act is a federal law that enables the president to deploy U.S. Federal Army personnel in special circumstances, such as the suppression of disorder and insurgency within American cities. Given that Trump and the Republican Party will not accept the result of this November's elections, there are reports that Democrats may refuse to accept the election results if Donald Trump wins. At the same time, there have been reports of renewed anti-racist protests in U.S. cities after a grand jury's decision on Wednesday, 23rd of September, not to bring charges relating to Breonna Taylor's death. The grand jury decided not to bring direct charges against three police officers: Breonna Taylor, a black female who was killed in the city of Louisville, Kentucky. In New York, anti-racism protesters blocked Brooklyn Bridge during the Breonna Taylor demonstration and demanded justice for the black woman killed by police officers. The recent events reveal America's true face, which was once a dreamland for those who look for democracy. It seems that November's presidential election will turn into a nightmare if both nominees, or even one of them, reject the results of the election. In that case, it will undermine conceptions like American Dream and Great America. The upcoming danger is not merely that the 2020 presidential election will bring political and social split. Americans fear something much worse may happen. The country is facing highly serious challenges, such as the coronavirus pandemic, a reckless leader, deep-rooted racial discrimination, and failed political system that is apt to resort to violent acts against protesters. There are enough to overthrow empires or superpowers. According to the New York Times, from Myanmar to Canada, people are asking, how did a superpower allow itself to be felled by a virus? And why won't the president commit to a peaceful transition of power? We should take warning by New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman seriously when Friedman declared recently that the United States could be headed towards a second civil war following Donald Trump's comments around not carrying out a peaceful transition of power should he lose this November's election. New York Times' Thomas Friedman said, "You know, I began my career as a journalist covering Lebanon's civil war and in its history. I'm terrified to find myself ending my journalistic career covering America's potential second civil war in its history."
Food for thought.
Salam, and here are words of guidance from the Prophet of Islam that are food for thought for Islamic unity. On the resurrection day, no foot of a servant of Allah will move before being asked about four things: the years and how they were spent, the body and how it was used, the wealth and how it was earned and spent, and about love towards us, the Ahlul Bayt.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. This is your host, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. And today we are with the new program of Spring of Truths from IRB English Radio with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini. We were talking about his viewpoints regarding the theology and servitude. And today we have reached to another saying of Imam Khomeini, in which he is saying, link yourselves up to this ocean, the ocean of divinity, the ocean of prophethood, and the ocean of the Holy Quran. Now, here Imam Khomeini is basically referring to what Quran says, because Quran says that your close guardian is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the Prophet. And obviously, if you want to have piety, if you want to be God-weary, you need to follow Holy Quran. And here, Imam Khomeini refers to this terminology, that all these things are the oceans, the way the ocean never ends. And it is so deep that when you want to dive into it, you can get lost. Or maybe you cannot have all the water, you cannot discover whatever is in the ocean. Same is the case with the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran usually looks like a book, but it is an ocean. The prophethood, the system of prophethood, the system of guidance that has been set by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the ocean, and the divinity itself is the ocean. So you need to link yourself to this ocean. If you link yourself to this ocean, you will become the part of the ocean, and then you will never have an end.
Peter Snow, News at 10, Paris.
We did the first long interview with the Ayatollah.
It is the temporary residence of the man who symbolizes the religious opposition to the Shah and who guides the movement to overthrow him. Have you considered it might be the time to compromise, to accept the concessions he's made to avoid the deaths of perhaps thousands of your followers?
If the Shah tells the truth, and he is honest in what he says, then he has to accept and submit to the demands of the people.
invited to the holy city of Qom to interview him there in his headquarters.
But if you do not link yourself with the ocean, you will remain as a small river, maybe. You maybe remain as a small spring, but obviously you need to become the part of the ocean, as Imam Khomeini said. He also mentions that know that gratitude for the open and the concealed blessing of God, the exalted, is one of the necessary duties of servitude and devotion that must be performed by all, each according to his ability. Even though no creature is able to offer due thanks unto God, the exalted, it is God that gives us everything. And even when we thank to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we cannot offer the due thanks to him. We cannot offer this due thanks unto God. Why? Because he is unlimited. He has the extreme power. He is the extreme knowledgeable. And we, being a possible being, we are limited to him. May Allah give us this chance to understand the teachings of Quran and Ahlul Bayt, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Imagine you're living in the sun belt of the world where the heat of the sun is fierce even the depths of winter. Imagine you're living in one of the most impoverished countries in the world. You have no job, money, insurance, health system, clean water, nothing, and you don't know from where or when your next meal will come. Imagine your country is torn apart as a result of a bloody war, and the enemy is viciously targeting all civilian infrastructure, including the national grid. Without electricity, your country will regress to an age of darkness. The wheels of industry will come to a halt. Hospitals won't function properly, and everyday life will become a living hell. If you are in Yemen, you don't need to imagine yourself in all these horrible situations. You're already part of this human tragedy. Among endless problems induced by the war, long hours of power outages have created an invisible pain that runs through the whole country. The power cuts reach 8 hours a day, sometimes reaching 24 hours. It's like hell. We cannot sleep because of the high heat. We are living and dying in the dark. These are common sentences that can be heard in Yemeni's everyday conversation.
When you see that they attack electricity stations, power lines, power stations as well, and also blockade the oil industry and the oil imports that is so necessary for the electricity production in Yemen. One of the major reasons behind this is that they want to break Yemen's spirit. These are attacks that no longer target military goods, military or equipment or soldiers of the Yemeni Republic.
Power outages have left almost all major cities in the dark since the onset of the war in 2015. The Saudi-led coalition has destroyed many transmission lines, power stations, and other electricity facilities, crippling the country's critical centers. Yemen's Ministry of Electricity says the coalition has targeted more than 5,000 power stations and other pieces of critical energy infrastructure, most of them away from any fighting or military site. According to the ministry, 90% of the total Yemeni population are living without electricity.
There have been several reports already that there are a lot of health centers. Reports speak about the majority of health centers and hospitals in Yemen having shut down due to a lack of power and due to a lack of fuel necessary to fuel their generators. And the same goes for institutions such as oxygen factories that produce necessary oxygen tanks and oxygen machinery and equipment in order to keep people alive during life-saving surgery.
In April 2016, Saudi warplanes destroyed the main power station in Taiz province. 4 months later, in August, they dropped bombs on two generating stations at Harath and Midi in Haja province. 8 bombs also targeted the main power station in Amran, destroying 2 transformers. The coalition had already bombed in July 2015 a compound housing employees of a power plant and their families, killing and injuring more than 300. Some families have reportedly pulled their children out of school to fetch water as electric pumps have become useless. And those students who still go to school cannot study without electricity when night comes. Needless to say, the surface water children and women fetch is often contaminated with cholera and other bacteria.
You have to bear in mind that take away a nation's electricity and you make them drop back decades, if not centuries, into the past. And whereas, of course, you can say, in the past people survived as well, the sudden drawback, the sudden collapse that the sudden cutting of all power causes will immediately, and in the course of weeks and months even more, cause a mass amount of civilian deaths. This is basically unavoidable if you take such a drastic step as to cut off an entire nation's power for an extended period of time.
Meanwhile, a handful of factories that have survived the war are now closed down in the absence of electricity. Long-lasting power outages have been taking their toll on Yemeni patients whose lives are dependent on life-saving facilities.
When lengthy power outages occur, and the emergency backup generators may not always and may not always be enough to keep the power running for a long time in places such as hospitals, emergency centers, childcare services, factories that produce necessary medical and other equipment. So this has had a very intense direct result for thousands of people in Yemen who are suffering from medical conditions, people who have been wounded due to the bombings, for example, that Saudi Arabia has been carrying out in Yemen for years now.
Yemen's Public Electricity Corporation has estimated that the financial damage from these measured attacks on power infrastructure adds up to over $4 billion.
When they seek to destroy Yemen completely, this is their way of indeed reducing the country back to ashes, and then later on come back with a few billions of petrodollars to build up the country back as a Saudi puppet state, and then portray the money that they gave as an act of charity. This is a very typical Saudi strategy that we have seen in this region in particular.
Yemeni citizens now have to pay a monthly subscription fee of up to 350 to 400 Yemeni riyals to private sector producers. Many Yemeni families cannot afford it. Before the war, it was just 7 Yemeni riyals per kilowatt. years of indiscriminate airstrikes and bombardments have destroyed the national grid and contaminated large areas across Yemen, including areas through which power lines pass, turning them into fields full of mines and unexploded bombs. In the words of Abdul Qadir Motahar, Director General of Transportation at the Electricity Corporation, "We have 490 electric towers in the Sana'a Marib line that passes through now, most of which are now destroyed or affected by the raids, shelling, and unexploded ordnance."
The blame for Western countries goes much further than merely selling weapons. Of course, when you sell weapons, I mean, my native country of Belgium has recently ceased selling weapons directly to much of the Saudi military, but not all, I believe. But before that, the Belgian government always said, like, we sell these weapons to the Saudis. What they do with it afterwards is not exactly our fault. You know, that this they try to kind of turn around a little bit and shift the blame away that way. But the blame goes much further than that, especially in countries like the United Kingdom and the United States. They don't just sell weapons to Saudi Arabia, but they are directly involved in intelligence services. There are American and British forces and Israeli forces and experts directly present in the war rooms of the Saudi-led coalition.
The Yemeni Executive Mine Action Center says the dense amount of mines and unexploded ordnance that are now spread near electric transmission lines is huge. It'll take a long time before teams are able to reach them to start the rebuilding process. It is clear that a poor country like Yemen, which cannot secure even the basic staples of life, cannot get rid of these huge amounts of unexploded remnants and landmines in the near future. With the help of Ansarullah, Yemeni citizens have just started using solar energy. But the question is, will the Saudi-led coalition allow them to use it for a long time? And will light overcome darkness in the end?
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
U.S. President Donald Trump signed a defense spending bill in December of 2019 to create the Space Force officially. It's the sixth branch of the U.S. Armed Services and the first new military service since the U.S. Air Force was created way back in 1947. Of the $72 million in funds originally requested for the Space Force in fiscal year 2020, the U.S. Congress granted only $40 million in its bipartisan spending deal. President Trump said during the signing, space is the world's newest warfighting domain, claiming, amid grave threats to our national security, American superiority in space is absolutely vital. And we're leading, but we're not leading by enough. But very shortly, we'll be leading by a lot. According to the NPR, the idea and Trump's provocative statements were widely mocked, providing fodder for the talk show hosts, cartoonists, and comedy writers. Senior military officials have previously raised concerns about what it will cost, and former U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis warned against rushing into creating the force without clearly defined goals. and what exactly are those so-called grave threats that President Trump spoke about? We now present you an article written by Dave Makichuk. The piece is titled Facing the Inevitable Weaponization of Outer Space. The article has been taken from the AsiaTimes.com website. Please stay with us for more of Dave Makichuk's article. It is apparent that conflicts of the military kind exist all over the world. Despite man's best efforts to create peace, wars continue, and so does the burgeoning arms industry. Five U.S. companies, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, and General Dynamics, accounted for $148 billion and 35% of total top 100 arms sales in 2018. But now there is talk of yet another Cold War space race. And by the way, all those five companies named above would benefit should that occur. U.S. President Donald Trump signed the defense spending bill in December of 2019 to create the Space Force officially. It's the sixth branch of the U.S. Armed Services and the first new military service since the U.S. Air Force was created way back in 1947. Of the $72 million in funds originally requested for the Space Force in fiscal year 2020, the U.S. Congress granted only $40 million in its bipartisan spending deal. President Trump said during the signing ceremony, "Space is the world's newest warfighting domain," claiming, "Amid grave threats to our national security, American superiority in space is absolutely vital, and we're leading, but we're not leading by enough. But very shortly, we'll be leading by a lot." According to NPR, the idea and Donald Trump's provocative statements were widely mocked, providing fodder for talk show hosts, cartoonists, and comedy writers. Senior military officials have previously raised concerns about what it will cost, and former U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis warned against rushing into creating the Space Force without clearly defined goals. And what exactly are those so-called grave threats that President Trump spoke about? The so-called counter-space capabilities developed by China include kinetic kill missiles, ground-based lasers, orbiting space robots, and space surveillance to monitor objects across the globe and in space. Electronic weapons such as satellite jammers, cyber capabilities, and direct energy weapons also are part of China's arsenal of counter-space systems. Its space program is also expanding by leaps and bounds, with exploration of the Moon and Mars well within its capabilities. According to the Space Foundation, an American non-profit organization, China's government has made conquering space a key strategic priority, with the nation's reported $8 billion space budget second only to the United States. Meanwhile, the U.S. claims that Russia has successfully tested a space weapon. The device, launched on 15th of July this year, is not a weapon but merely a satellite designed to inspect other satellites. But the U.S. Space Command, USCC, claimed in a statement that the Russians launched an anti-satellite weapon, a very capable anti-satellite weapon. Whatever it is, Russia launched it from another satellite, known as Cosmos 2543, a satellite that was launched on 25th of November 2019. It entered a new orbit, closely approaching but not destroying a third Russian satellite. U.S. Space Command, USCC,